I don't want you to come back from Albany unless you come back with the medical center. So I sort of had my marching orders. When I got to the hearing, I sat in the back of the room. Westchester made their case, and it wasn't a threat because they acknowledged that the commission report was a sound one. And that point was that if there's to be the first one downstate other than Westchester, that Westchester should be in line as the second location. Then the Queens people made their presentations. The veterans were all there with their little veterans hats arguing why Suffolk was a wilderness and it was depriving people who served their country, and all the usual pap that professional veterans groups make as to why Queens had to be the proper location, because it was too burdensome for people in Queens even to go across the Triborough Bridge and go to the Bronx. They wanted it right in their backyard. And then Borough President Cary Ellett, a very distinguished looking man, white hair, portly, very smooth, very suave, got up to address the group. And his presentation was so smooth it was almost oily. He pointed out how he respects higher education and that when he was a member of the New York State Assembly, he had the direct privilege and honor of having nominated or supporting the nomination of several of the people who were seated up at the dais who are now distinguished trustees, and how he had the highest respect for them. And he thought that the proper solution, he agreed with the commission report that the state should fund these comprehensive medical centers, but the commission was in error in suggesting that Stony Brook, which was out in the boondocks, he didn't use the word boondocks, but he created that impression, and that really the center for medical care should be Queens County. And he had a counter offer, namely that Fort Totten was declared surplus, and that he, as borough president, would make land available, and this was the best location, and all these veterans were there who had served their country and given blood, and that this center was needed for the people of Queens, and that there were more people in Queens. Suffolk County was still a rural enclave, isolated from the rest of the world, and that obviously Queens was the proper location. The presentations were limited to about 3 minutes, so there wasn't time to go beyond a brief presentation, and I got up to speak on behalf of Suffolk County. We had one representative from the Suffolk Academy of Medicine who was sort of blackmailed into coming. Otis Pike was helpful in that, and that the Academy was not willing to support it, and there were some strong arm tactics where the Academy of Medicine was told, you better support it or else. It was that kind of arrangement. It was very heavy-handed. In any event, I got up to speak, and I said, and I remember my comments, that if it weren't for the gratuitous comments of self-seeking politicians and professional veterans who expect the nation to support them for their limited time of service to the country, which should have been enough honor for them to have served their country, that I wouldn't even trouble these distinguished trustees to make a case for Suffolk County. And I went on very briefly to point out several points as to why the commission report was correct, and why Stony Brook was the proper location, and why the trustees, in exercising their proper function, should ratify the recommendation, and that Stony Brook should be the location beyond any debate or issue. By the time I got back from Albany, it had really hit the fan. I received a number of calls from various papers, and I didn't even acknowledge the calls. I called Denison, I told him I resigned. I think I embarrassed his administration. He said, what happened? I said, well, the veterans from Queens and this politician Cariello were really devastating our case, and you said that my comments that I had typewritten were too mealy-mouthed and a bunch of crap, and that I shouldn't come back without the center, but I think I went overboard, and the veterans are up in arms, and Borough President Cariello is up in arms, and I probably have embarrassed his administration, therefore I'm giving him my resignation when I get into the office the next morning. And Denison says, well, we'll see about that. Next morning, got to the office, I pick up the Long Island Press, and there's this article, Veterans Demand Planners Ouster. And it was a brief newspaper article, that I had vilified the noble veterans who had served their country, and they demanded that for the high insults and other comments that I be immediately summarily fired from my governmental position. And of course I pointed out that I was also a veteran of World War II, and I didn't expect the government to support me for the rest of my life. But be that as it may, the article was very cute because they called County Executive Dennison to ask his reaction, and Dennison said, well, I know Koppelman very well, and he would never make any statements to insult anybody. But I got, when I went into Dennison's office, I had this newspaper clipping, and Dennison just winked at me. And he said, did you get the center? And I said, well, I fought like hell. But in terms of the real politics, I would suspect that Dennison's discussions with Rockefeller didn't hurt either. And I'm sure that in some of the backroom discussions, the governor made his point of view known, because he had indicated to us that he was supporting the commission's findings. And I think this was probably more telling than anything else. But the center was established.
Do you know how well he knew Muir?
Dennison didn't know him at all, but, yeah, but the governor did.
Yeah.
The governor did. So I think it may have even been a fait accompli before the hearing, but we didn't know that at the time.
Right.
And then, of course, subsequent to that, the campus, I thought, handled the academy in a very brilliant way. They made these sort of adjunct opportunities available to members of the Suffolk Medical Fraternity, where they could have an affiliation with the campus. And I think that immediately muted any opposition that the medical fraternity had.
I think that was Ed Pellegrino.
Yes, it was.
Because
it was.
I've been on the board of Mather for over 20 years, and I remember him coming and talking to the doctors at Mather and to the trustees.
He did that also to the Academy of Medicine. He also did that to the other hospitals. He went to Southside, he went to Huntington.
Right. Oh, he's a very persuasive individual.
Oh, very dynamic. He and the president didn't get along too well, because they were two very hard-driving, dedicated men with a sense of mission of what was going to be accomplished. And I remember on one occasion, Dr. Toll, who was very close-mouthed, sort of intimating that Stony Brook had one president. And it was sort of in private conversation. And I knew about the problems between Pellegrino and Toll, because I had to work with both gentlemen. We were setting up the Comprehensive Health Planning Council and also the Heart Cancer Stroke. And Pellegrino was on the National Heart Cancer and Stroke Fund, and I had to write the application for it. So I was working closely with Ed, and also on general campus things. Johnny Toll would always call up, because when he needed Suffolk County help, I was the link between the county and the university. And one day I was talking to Ed Pellegrino, you know, and I tried to soften some of it, you know, and I said, you know, you and the president ought to get along much better. After all, there's a commonality of purpose. And Pellegrino said, the medical center is my province. And I remember saying to him that, well, you know, Dr. Toll is the president, you're the vice president. Sort of intimating, you know, there's a pecking order. And Pellegrino's retort was immediate. He says, the vice president of the medical center is higher than the president of the camp. So I can understand why there were strong feelings. But Ed was an interesting man. When he indicated he was going to leave, I was overwhelmed, because we thought he was such an asset to Long Island.
He was.
And he said to me, he said, I am a tree chopper, not a toothpick manufacturer. And I had to dwell on that for a while. His real interest was in building these things. Once the decision was made to build it, he lost interest. You know, he was more of a creator than an administrator in terms of wanting to stay on board to follow through.
And I think he was also frustrated by having to work within the bureaucracy of New York State.
He couldn't tolerate that. He couldn't tolerate that. Because he was such a dynamic man. I mean, you know,
Do you have any feel yourself for the character of New York State bureaucracy, or character of the central office, and let's say the Legislative Committee on Education, Bureau of the Budget, that sort of thing? Do you have any
feel
for that kind of context?
A very biased one. I mean, the experiences I lived through, where hopefully I could be somewhat objective, particularly if I'm reciting past history, I think I can be quite accurate. In terms of these other questions, I'd have to very strongly put on the record that I'm probably more subjective than objective about it. As far as...
The reason I'm asking you this is that I've had 3 hours with Roger Revelle, who was the director of Scripps Oceanographic Institute and considered to be the founder of UCSD.
Let me respond to your questions this way.
Okay.
As far as the New York State Senate Committee on Higher Learning, which is now chaired by Senator Lavelle, I have always found the New York State Legislature to be positive and cooperative, particularly as far as Stony Brook is concerned. Now, one of the things that Dennison and I did try and do, and I think successfully, was to get Newsday, which then became the sole major newspaper in Long Island, to understand why Stony Brook was so important. And so from day one, we always had very positive editorial support from Newsday. And this, of course, didn't hurt in the state legislature, Democrats and Republicans, from working together on a nonpartisan Long Island issue, vis-a-vis Stony Brook.
Newsday, was Bill Moyers there then?
Bill Moyers was afterwards. I'm talking about Captain Guggenheim, who was publisher.
Right.
The editor was Alan Hathaway. Moyers came in after the Johnson situation. Bill Moyers was Johnson's press person.
Oh, yes.
And Moyers came in...
As President Johnson.
President Johnson.
Right.
So Moyers wasn't there in 62, or 63,
yes,
or 64. The state legislature has always been supportive. And from a budgetary point of view, I'd have to break up the state office of the budget over a time period, because my reactions to them have changed. When Rockefeller was governor, my purview was that the budget office, under the governor's control, was very supportive of the campus.
Norm Hurd. Right.
Was very positive, and in fact, on occasion, they were throwing money at us even faster than Stony Brook could absorb it. And so the campus was a nightmare in terms of the quality of the grounds, because there was so much construction going on and so much attention to bricks and mortar that you couldn't pay that much attention to the physical grounds, and it was sort of mud alley every time it rained. But the key point is that my impression, and I think Dennison would have supported that if he were still with us, was that the governor and the budget office was extremely supportive of the campus. And I think the evidence of over $800 million in construction is evidence of that. After Rockefeller left the scene, that situation did change. And it changed in the sense that a number of the buildings that were part of the master plan for this campus, and the first one that I personally got involved with, was the physics chemistry building. And
physics chemistry, physics math?
Well, it's the building that's directly behind the library where we have the faculty.
That's chemistry.
Well, originally.
Graduate chemistry.
Now it's graduate chemistry, or was it always graduate chemistry?
You're talking about the little red brick building?
No. I'm talking about the big brown one. I thought that was physics chemistry.
It's chemistry only. We've got the math physics building behind that, you know.
Well, it was that whole complex, those mauve-colored buildings, directly behind, we can look at them from here.
Right. The library, the one with the black part,
right.
The black tower, that's all chemistry.
Right, and then the one right next to it is physics.
Physics and math.
Yeah, well,
combined.
We call it physics hyphen chemistry. It's misnomer, obviously, yeah. But that's the complex I'm talking about.
Right.
It represented about $33 million in buildings, if I remember the issue. And it was eliminated from the by the bar, you know, the budget people under the governor. And this was one of the fights where the state legislature was most helpful, you know, in persuading that...
The governor was Kerry.
The governor was Kerry.
And the budget people, was that Vallette? Or
I don't think it was Vallette. I don't recall.
Axelrod.
May have been Axelrod.
Axelrod.
May have been Axelrod. That name sticks in my mind. Vallette doesn't.
Yeah.
But in any event, it sure as hell wasn't hurt. And we had quite a battle, and Newsday was very supportive with editorial comments and so on for that building. And similarly, I remember that we had a major concern over the Fine Arts Center, which, as I recall, was a $15 million building. And again, you know, it was a question of it being postponed or delayed or eliminated. And again, the legislature was helpful in considering that that be put in.
As the size of the auditorium, however, was cut down.
To 1,500 seats, and that was a mistake.
No, from 15 to 11.
To 11.
Right.
It should have been 2,000 seats. But, and I think we suffer as a result of it.
Yes, we do.
But the point is, the climate had changed. Instead of the building funds being automatically supported by Albany, it became more of a challenge in terms of getting it.
Why was that?
Well, for one thing, I think we were beginning to get more upstate competition, particularly with funds going to places like Buffalo, et cetera, and so forth. And in all candor, with the absence of Governor Rockefeller, I think the climate towards Stony Brook from the governor's office became slightly more chilly. Be that as it may, when you ask what is my reaction to these people, I'd have to say my reaction to the governor's budget people has become increasingly negative. And if we come to the current administration, the Cuomo administration, I think downright negative. The governor talks about the decade of the child, and then he cuts aid to education. In his current budget, for example, with all the high-sounding phrases of New York being a family, and all of the high-blown phrases about concern for the downtrodden and all the rest, I can't help but observe that the governor didn't include any support for additional aid for education, particularly at the primary and secondary level in terms of school aid. And since Long Island is the highest cost area in the state of New York for primary and secondary education, I'd have to say that the governor and his budget people are not education's best friends. That's, again, is a personal bias. When we go to the other side of the state picture, looking at SUNY Central, again, here I'd have to voice another bias, that I never felt that they were overly friendly to Stony Brook. I think some of it may have been personal, and that some of the administrators, one in particular, was rebuffed in his desire to be president of Stony Brook. And I think personalities do get involved in it.
Oscar Lanford.
Well, I didn't feel free to get into names, but be that as it may, I think SUNY Central never viewed Stony Brook as being part of their team, as it were. Even when John Toll was president and he was fighting for new programs, a law center, and so on, SUNY Central was not overly supportive. I think during the current wait for a new chancellor, the temporary chancellor was not unfriendly, but I don't think he was in a position to launch any new initiatives.
No. Who was this?
Jerry
Johnson?
Before Johnstone, the acting chancellor.
O'Leary?
Commissar. I didn't detect any overt unfriendliness on the part of Commissar, but he wasn't in a position where he could really demonstrate leadership as acting chancellor. The new chancellor, I'm concerned about simply because he was very quick to accede to the governor's concern for budget tightening, I thought a little too quickly, from a strategic point of view. And I haven't seen anything that would overtly indicate, you know, that he's a great fan of Stony Brook. I may be wrong. I hope I am. But as far as SUNY Central is concerned, and I could understand their concerns for the broader 64 campus setup, where everything obviously can't go to Stony Brook, I think one could make an argument that on balance, they've been somewhat supportive. I think they have their own concerns in terms of dealing with the governor and the budget office. I don't think they fully have utilized the state legislature as an ally, because perhaps they don't want to antagonize the governor, and for good reason. I think some improvement has been made vis-a-vis a little more autonomy for the local campuses.
That was Horton.
Yeah.
Horton's commission.
Horton's commission. And I thought their commission moved in the right direction.
Who was the chairman of that? Was it Friday?
I don't remember.
Robinson.
But I thought their findings made eminent good sense.
Okay.
I had hoped that there'd be more independence vis-a-vis the construction and dormitory authorities. But I'd have to say that some of the later buildings that were built, such as this social behavioral tower, at least had an outstanding contractor, and as a result, I think the state got an outstanding building. That wasn't always the case. So it's sort of a mixed bag. I don't quarrel for a moment that the state has serious fiscal problems, and as a result of that, we're the beneficiary of bad tidings. But the campus exists. The state of New York put in a fantastic amount of capital investment into it. More to the point, I think the campus itself has attracted a caliber of faculty that has made an achievement that is pretty enviable in academia anywhere in the world. I mean, if we stop to think in a positive sense rather than a negative one, it's easy for all of us to look for the negatives. But if I put an outsider's hat on, and I've been an outsider as well as an insider, and I look at this campus, which is three decades old, and you look to the excellence where it's in the upper 10 in the nation in a number of fields, computer science, physics, applied mathematics, and several of the other areas, and in the behavioral field where we have outstanding scholars in sociology and psychology and the humanities and so on and so forth, let alone the brilliant faculty at the medical center. I can't think of any other campus that in 30 years has achieved what Stony Brook has achieved. Now, sure, you can squawk about, you know, the problem of the old dormitories and the need for, if not slum removal, at least renewal. But on balance, I don't know of any other campus in the United States that has achieved what Stony Brook has achieved in three decades. I mean, Harvard has been around for more than three centuries. Yale has been around. Even Cornell has been around for one century. And when you look at Stony Brook as a major university center, I think it has a record that has placed it as a world-class institution. And that is no small compliment to what the public can achieve. I think Rockefeller deserves a lion's share of the credit. But even the succeeding governors have not destroyed what exists. And of course, the political interaction with the state entities is really a competition at the state level. And to the effect that Stony Brook knows how to effectively manipulate between the budget office, which really is the governor, and SUNY and the state legislature, has augured to Stony Brook's well-being. For example, when the governor's budget people eliminated the Solid Waste Institute or eliminated the Living Marine Institute, the state legislature through the Senate and through Senator LaValle and Senator Lack was very quick to reinstitute those programs. And if we understand the state political process, I think we'd have to acknowledge that Stony Brook has been reasonably successful in protecting its interests. At least that's one person's view.
Laval has been helpful all along, sympathetic?
Absolutely. In my judgment, Senator Laval, Senator Lack, has set the tone where all the other senators, Trunzo and Johnson, etc., have been supportive. And let me say, at some political peril to themselves, so it's a testimony to their independence and courage. There were voices in the Stony Brook area, you know, that have not been supportive of Stony Brook, particularly if there were controversies when they had the drug raid on campus and other negative aspects. It would have been politically smart for members of the legislature to turn their back completely on Stony Brook. That would have been the short-term political wisdom. But we've had state senators, going back to Senator Giafrida, Leon, and Ken, and Lack, and Owen Johnson, and others, when it came to the well-being of Stony Brook, they didn't hesitate to put Stony Brook's concern above their constituents' negative attitudes. I remember attending a meeting in Senator Giafrida's office, and it was on general concerns within this Stony Brook area, and one of the individuals, a civic leader, started to bash the university. Now, the political thing for the senator to have done was to listen politely, and if he didn't agree, at least not be committal, so that he wouldn't antagonize the constituents. And the senator just cut it off short and said, now, wait a minute. If you think I'm going to do anything to the detriment of the State University at Stony Brook, you people have another thing coming. This university is an asset for the entire community, let alone the state, and I'm on their side. And I thought that took not only courage, but it was an indication of where the state legislature stood. And while there have been, on occasion, short-term flaps, like when we ask a senator to serve on a Stony Brook committee, and then we fail to send him a notice of meeting and they get their nose out of joint, or if Stony Brook makes an announcement and everybody in the whole world knows about this great achievement, and Stony Brook forgets to inform the local state senators who helped in the achievement, and therefore they read us the Riot Act. Aside from that, they've been completely supportive.
Any other questions that occur to you?
Well, I'm sure if I search my memory, other anecdotes will come to the fore, but by and large, I think it's been a remarkable history over the last 30 years.
Do you know anything about the Oyster Bay situation?
Only third party. I have no direct dealings with Oyster Bay whatsoever, and I'd only be repeating what I got from others, and I'd prefer not to do that. The only one dealing I had was when the Oyster Bay campus was initiated as an engineering center. The first president was a chap by the name of Lee. And he was getting into all sorts of difficulties. And I remember getting a call from Newsday, and I don't know why they called me, asking whether I thought the president should be changed. And I wouldn't respond because I had no contribution to make. But that was the only knowledge I had of their operations at that time.
You know the nature of the difficulties that he got into?
I think in part, from what I heard, third party, he didn't get along well with the faculty. That may have initiated some of his difficulties. And there was also some concern that Stony Brook had to be more than an engineering campus. And again, third party, I gather that those who were not engineers felt that his interest was not their interest. It was that kind of situation. I think it was perhaps more personality, because the man obviously had superb credentials.
The year is 62 to 65. Do you have any comments about those 3 years?
62 to 65? To me, those were the pivotal years. I think that's when the real focus of the campus was established. And, of course, the governor was very supportive in those years. So I think a lot of what exists today had its genesis in that period. I think the presence of people like yourself and Sid Gelber and Bentley Glass.
He wasn't there until 65.
He came in 65.
He came with Johnny.
He came with Johnny. But I think those were seminal years. I think, if the campus didn't keep its focus in those days, the campus wouldn't be what it is today. It couldn't have been because there were too many outside forces that would have worked in the other direction. 62, of course, was really the beginning, That was...
Beginning here.
The beginning here. And they were not easy days, as I recall. They were exciting days, but they certainly weren't easy. I think there were as many authorities on what this campus should be as there were individuals who were interested in the campus. But those were the formative times.
I remember having to deal with people from both the Long Island Press and the Newsday. And they were in the habit, right at the beginning of 62, of our fall of 62, of looking for controversy.
Oh, well, that was always the case. Even to this day, the reporter who's assigned by Newsday to cover the campus is always looking for controversy because controversy is what makes news.
Right.
There's an article in today's Newsday about the center I've established here. As done by a reporter who's been covering the regional planning board for 25 years. And he's a personal friend. And if he were to merely write, here's an educational center and here's what it's trying to do and here are the studies it's going to do, that really wouldn't be newsworthy, even though that was the substance of the interview. Instead, he calls up a bunch of politicians and says, well, if the center is going to do studies that are going to be of use to government, isn't that a conflict? So they set up a hypothesis, and of course, what a politician's going to say, well, sure, it's going to be a conflict, because that makes news, even if there is no conflict. And that's historic, but when it counts in terms of editorial support, Newsday and the press, Newsday more than the press, because the press had certain constraints being a Jamaica paper. But they were generally supportive of the campus. Newsday has consistently been supportive of the campus. Because Dennison and I personally got numerous editorials, at our recommendation. So,
How was Bill Moyers?
Bill Moyers was certainly supportive. Bill is an interesting man. He's quite an intellectual in his own right. He's a preacher. He's a minister with a very strong social conscience. And when he first came in, one of the first things he did was to invite me to dinner to get a feel for Long Island. And the question of Stony Brook came up at that time. And the medical center was just beginning to get underway. And there was discussion of including the social program with Kravitz, who had been in the Kennedy administration, who Moyers knew. And Moyers was very impressed and very supportive of this concept of a social concern in medicine. And when issues did come up, like some of the funds for construction and so on, I called up Moyers, and Newsday's editorials were right there, Now, Moyers was a good friend, and in fact, ironically enough, his wife is...
Yes. Has she been a good friend?
Oh, absolutely.
She has.
She's a very fine woman. I first met her, Dennison was still county executive. And she has consistently been very supportive. Very supportive.
Okay. I think I've run out of questions, Lee.
Well, I'll look for some of those early papers and letters and correspondence and that newspaper article, and I'll see if I can find Rocky's speech.
See if you can, because those things disappear quickly. And
if Newsday, and I think Newsday covered it, it'll be easier to get it in Newsday because they have a morgue. The Long Island Press is out of business, but Newsday may still have it, or my files may have it. I'll go back and look at it.
Well, you've been a real supporter of the university right from the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
And I
saw something in the potential of this campus that people like yourself and Johnny Toll has brought to fruition.
Yeah.
And as I look what exists here, this really is the cultural heart of this county, aside from being the tertiary care facility as well. And, you know, the outreach to the community in terms of the lectures and the fine arts programs and the musicals, this really is Suffolk County's Lincoln Center and Rockefeller Medical Center and Columbia University all wrapped up in one.
That's a good thought. That's a good thought.
I never could understand why Johnny Toll on occasion would refer to this campus as the Berkeley of the East. I don't think it had to be the Berkeley of anything. It had to be just itself.
Well, the California system is not a good parallel for us. It's not a parallel.
It's not a parallel.
Actually.
It's not a parallel.
I must say that... Well, I think probably we better stop.
Thanks very much.
If she interrupts us, that means I'm in trouble.